We're on chapter 7, The Transcendent Author of History. And he starts off by saying that that before we can make sense of where God intersects the presence of evil in this world, we must gain a glimpse of his transcendent character. And this transcendent, you know, above creation thing is something that he's going to really stress in the first part of this chapter here.
And it's more than just, I mean, it's not a location. It's right. God is other than his creation, right? He's different. Mm-hmm. And so he transcends his creation that way, yeah.
And so if you have conversations with Muslims here, this is something that they will take and say that Allah is even more transcendent in their understanding. And there are some issues with that, like, you know, Allah is more transcendent than even his own word. And different issues that we get into that, but this idea of transcendence of putting into proper perspective who God is gets us to kind of this understanding of what the world is like, and therefore the answer to the problem of evil. And so that's why he's starting off here. So he also says that Scripture uncovers a magnificent vision of God that is overwhelming. It makes small-souled people nervous. It is anchored in several unmistakable and fundamental truths. And one of those first truths is that God's transcendence means that he is the eternal, infinite, wholly sufficient I am. And so he says that he is the uncreated creator, possessor, and sustainer of some things. Nope, not some things. All things. What things? All.
Yeah.
Here's where the all means all. And there's nothing that has been made or continues or has come about that is outside his scope of knowledge.
Yeah. Secondly, with regard to this transcendence, from this lofty position, he tells us, emerges God's supreme lordship. So not only is he, you know, above in terms of greater and infinite and eternal, but he's also Lord, right? He is completely sovereign. He controls it and decreeing all that transpires in the course of history. And then he providentially ensures that everything unfolds according to the plan that he has laid out, the divine plan. So that's the second. So he's transcendent. He's Lord. Thirdly, this all encompassing divine determination is compatible, he tells us, with human freedom and human responsibility. God does not operate as an impersonal, fatalistic force, right? His sovereignty does not undermine or bypass human willing and choosing. Christensen tells us that God coerces no one to do what they do.
Right.
They do it. So we have these three various aspects here, right? His transcendence, his lordship, but this compatibilist notion with regard to human choice, freedom, and free will, right? God doesn't force anybody to do anything.
Right. Yeah. So having this conversation of, oh, we're just all puppets or robots is antithetical to what the idea that Calvinism or Reformed theology brings about. And so, If we're dealing with someone who wants to bring those up, we should have a proper answer for why that's not the case. But at the same time, we should all, especially if we're on this side of grace, that we're all believers, we should also go forth with maybe just a modicum of self-respect for the other person too. Mm-hmm. You maybe do unto others as you would have them do unto you kind of deal.